Chapter 11. Around the Edges of Darkness. The large gate of Thornhold was opened just a bit and was stuck, but there was still a wide enough gap for the companions to slip through one at a time.
"The spider broke the gate,"
Regis reasoned from the bend in the great hinge, or what else might have done such damage.
"It's still in here," he warned. "I don't want to see that thing up close."
"None of us two," Evenel told him, but she was looking more at Entreri as she spoke. When he glanced at the assassin, Regis understood Evenel's apparent concern. But the man was wobbling with every step, muttering under his breath, and seeming as if he might fall over at any moment.
"It is, or was, a retriever, as I have told you," Evenel went on. "If it remains, then its focus is solely on Drizzt Do'Urden. It is no threat to us unless we get between it and Drizzt. For the sake of your friend, I hope it is still in there, still hunting."
"And then we kill it?" Regis asked.
Evenel snorted at that preposterous thought.
"In that case, we try to find Drizzt first, and we help him get far ahead of the monster."
She blew out a long sigh.
"I should have done that on the road when we met up with him, but I hadn't the spells prepared. Nor would it have been a safe prospect, as the retriever would go for him wherever I put him, and would destroy everything in its path, even if it had to cut a trench across half of Toril."
"Sounds lovely," Dahlia muttered. She skipped over to Entreri and bolstered him. Evenel nodded and led the way, fearlessly going through the narrow opening into the courtyard. She peeked her head back out. "The spider is gone."
"In the building," Athrogate offered. "The tunnels here are bigger than you think."
Evenel, her face grim, shook her head, and when the others came through, they understood. For there in the middle of the courtyard was a huge, bubbling mass of black ooze, the now too familiar remains of a demon's departure from this plane of existence. Not a sound beyond their own footsteps followed the friends to that bubbling goo. The place was dead. The silence profound. They just knew it. A closer look at the demonic detritus confirmed Evenel's claims, for the scar was decidedly spider-shaped, with the eight legs distinctly visible. In front of the beastly remains, the ground was torn, as if hit by a ray of some sort, and there were clearly footprints, humanoid footprints, bare feet leading into it. And there, too, the tattered remains of clothing and boots the friends knew well.
"Drizzt,"
Regis mumbled, his voice breaking.
"Is he dead, then?"
Dahlia asked, and she, too, seemed shaky. Quietly, tears rolled down the halfling's cheeks. Athrogate looked stunned, his earlier grief seemingly multiplied by the thought of Drizzt's departure, and Artemis, still shaken from his torturous cocoon, bowed his head as he put his arm around Dahlia. Evenel realized then how profoundly this rogue dark elf had touched so many people, so many disparate people with different values and core beliefs. Even Artemis and Treri. It hadn't mattered whether they were openly goodly and kind folks like Regis, or those with far more sinister backgrounds, or those, like Athrogate, caught somewhere in the middle. All of them wobbled now, and Regis fell to his knees and buried his face in his hands. The connection to this drow went beyond mere friendship, Evenel recognized, and understood, because what Drizzt had given to them over the years could not be measured so simply as that. Indeed, the word friend seemed empty in the face of this. What Drizzt had given them was universal, and it crossed races, halfling, elf, human, dwarf, and drow too, she knew, for in watching Regis fighting bravely and failing against his overwhelming pain, Evenel saw the foreshadowing of Jarlaxle's response. Above all else, Drizzt had given to those around him honesty and heart, and he had tried, ever tried, to do what he believed was right. The legacy of that touched Evenel profoundly in that moment, and she too, who hardly knew the unusual drow ranger, choked back tears, overwhelmed by the display of true loss playing out before her, particularly that of Regis,
the gentle halfling who had faced Sharon with a smile. Her heart was warmed by it all, for this seemed a display of justice to her. Honest grief, generous grief, offered without any expectation of personal gain. She thought Menzo Berenzon a cold and heartless place indeed. "It's a big place," Athrogate said again, shaking himself with a bit of hope. He stepped over and hoisted Regis back onto his feet. "Come on then, Rumblebelly, we're not giving up. And find your faith in Drizzt, what? I ain't seeing no blood, and ain't for doubting that derned elf. Not what we do, we fight until we cannot fight no more." "Don't be the fool," Dahlia scolded too harshly, even Elf thought. "Ready to turn and cry and run at first sign, are ye? He's gone. Ye ain't knowing any such thing." "Then why did the retriever leave?" Dahlia asked. "Might be that the drow killed it to death in battle," Athrogate insisted.
"A retriever?"
Evenel asked gently, shaking her head.
"Don't ye never doubt the boy," Athrogate said. "Seen him kill bigger than that."
Regis perked up at that. He took a deep breath, sniffled once to clear his nose, and squared his shoulders. "Go and look then," Evenel told the two. "Call out if you find anything." She tried to be encouraging, for these dearest of friends to Drizzt deserved no less. But she heard her own voice and understood the unmistakable thickness of the resignation there. Athrogate and Regis started for the blasted door of the keep. Dahlia, after helping Entreri sit down on the ground, rushed to join them.
"You have had better 10 days, Evenel said to Entreri, walking over to join him.
"Just pain," he said. "The whole time I was in there, and lingering now. I couldn't get used to it. Unspeakable pain, unrelenting and undiminishing." Evenel nodded and put a hand on his shoulder. "Take my dagger and thrust it into my heart," he asked her. "Draw out my soul itself, send me to oblivion, I beg. For if that is what eternity has planned for me, I would rather be nothingness."
"You think your book written?"
"I just read it. It doesn't end well."
"It doesn't have to be that way, Artemis Entreri," Evenel assured him. "Those were only the chapters you've already lived. There are pages still yet to be filled."
"What do you know?" he asked doubtfully.
"I know that if your fate was sealed, if your story fully told, Sharon would have had no reason to let you return."
"Maybe just to torment me with the knowledge of what was to come."
"No, that is not her calling. Even though she was out of place these last days, such meaningless teasing is not her role in the multiverse."
"Her role?"
"Her role within the heart of every reasoning being. She is the facilitator of judgment, but not the judge. There is no enjoyment for her either way, the good or the bad. There is no preference."
"Then who is the judge?" Entreri asked. "Some god I never acknowledged? Some great superior being who makes of us pawns in his own strange game?"
"You are your own judge," Evenel explained. "In places within your heart, soul and memory where you cannot hide. You know this. Above all others, in those dark and private places, you know what you deserve."
And Treri's snort was caught somewhere between derision and resignation.
"Did Drizzt deserve his fate?" he asked.
"We don't know what that fate is."
"Don't we?"
Entreri asked, nodding toward the spider-shaped goo.
"In the afterlife," Evenel replied. "Are we speaking of divine justice or of the foibles of mortal beings? I doubt they are much the same. Every day, many get things they do not deserve, good and bad. Every day, 1,000 times every day."
She paused and spent a few moments just studying the man. He had been through so much, his pain was obvious. His face was scrunched up in a mask of anger, but there were tears in his eyes as well. "You cared for him," she said.
"It's complicated."
"Is it? Or do you make it complicated to cover your own ego?" And Trary looked up at her, his expression dismissive, but only for a moment.
"Looking at Drizzt was like looking into a mirror, but one with different lighting. His skin was dark, mine light. But his soul..." He paused and laughed helplessly. "You once said, so I was told, that in looking at me, at what I had become, he feared that it was what he might have become. There are no cocoons of stinging wasps awaiting Drizzt O'Erden, I am sure."
"And is that why you lament your history?"
"No," he answered sharply before she had even finished the sentence. "No," he repeated more softly. "I regret a lot, but because of what I have done to others, my own fate be damned, if it is damned."
"Well then, perhaps Artemis and Trary, Drizzt showed you what you hoped to become. In some ways, at least." She patted him on the shoulder and stood up, turning about. She closed her eyes and cast a spell of detection, seeking the radiations of magic. She was surprised when she did indeed sense something of interest, and she followed the feeling into the keep. The place, too, felt dead to her, and she saw down one hall the bodies of slain dwarves. Broken walls and widened doorways showed her that Drizzt had led the retriever into this complex, forcing the demon construct to do some of the cleansing that was much needed here. She heard the voices of her friends down a different hall, moving away from her, but nothing seemed amiss. She went back fully into her spell, and it guided her to a wall, which at first confused her. When she got very close, she noted a crack in the stone and managed to wriggle her finger in. Feeling about, and then pulling out a silver chain upon which was set a whistle shaped like a unicorn. "Andahar," she said, and for the first time she too found her voice cracking. Even in his last moments, Drizzt had thought of another, of this magical mount, and so he had stowed his chain out of the way. She started to pocket it, but changed her mind when she heard the others approaching, and instead put it back into the crevice. "For you. When you return, Drizzt O'Erden," she whispered, though she knew that to be all but impossible. She went back outside to Intrary and waited for the others to arrive.
"Nothing," Athrogate said.
"There's a lower level," Dalia added, casting a glare at the dwarf. "He would not go down there, nor would he allow us to."
"Shut your face, girl," Athrogate said.
"Drizzt might be down there," Regis argued.
"He is not," Evenel said with finality. "I have used my magic. Drizzt is not here. He is gone."
"Just gone?"
Athrogate said. "Taken to the abyss?" Dalia asked.
"Then we go to the abyss and get him," Athrogate said.
"Aye,"
Regis agreed. Evenel held up her hand to silence them all. She looked at Regis, at his eagerness to run to the abyss in pursuit of his lost friend. She doubted she could dissuade him, even if she could properly relate the hopelessness of such a venture. He needed this, she realized. He needed to feel like he was doing something, anything, to try to bring back that rogue drow. Evenel had thought she had a good measure of Drizzt's impact, but now she understood she had underestimated him. Even though she had known there was something special about him, about the honest life he had lived. She wondered if anyone would ever so lament her passing, would ever wear a mask of determination and pain as she saw now on the face of Regis. "In time," she said at length, "we will learn what we may, and enlist the proper and powerful allies. I have been there to the abyss. Or have memories of my namesake's ventures in the swirling smoke, at least. It is not a place one goes with any hope of returning."
But you have been there, Regis argued. Or your namesake had, as you just said.
As the guest of a demon queen, not as her enemy.
You think Loth herself has taken Drizzt?
It would take a being near her equal to grant a retriever, nay, two retrievers. We're not going to get him back, Dahlia whispered.
Maybe you're not, but I am, Regis snapped at her,
an uncharacteristic edge to his voice. Dahlia returned a hard glare, while Entrarian Athrogate expressed pity for the despondent halfling.
I'm right, though, Dahlia said. We're not going to get him back.
They all turned to Ivanel for some response. She wanted to offer the one they needed to hear, three of them at least, for she could not quite gauge Dahlia. She was surprised at how much she wanted to do that. But in the end, she found she couldn't deceive them, and she knew the truth.
No, she agreed. We're not.
Gronf will not answer, Penelope Harple told Catti Bree. The younger woman sighed, her concern mounting. Her belly was large now, the child very active as her pregnancy neared its end. She wanted to find Drizzt more than anything in the world, be with her husband, her baby's father, when she gave birth to their child.
Our child.
But where was he? For all Catti Bree's magical attempts, for all the messages Penelope had dispatched, for all the efforts of the other Harples, truly her friends, she had no word at all of Drizzt.
Gronf Beanry has an answer, though, Catti Bree reasoned. The gates are not working, and that almost certainly comes right from the roots of the Host Tower of the Arcane.
Or Mithril Hall itself,
Penelope said, wincing in anticipation that her words would surely worry Catti Bree.
Have you sent a message to the dwarves?
That is more difficult. Our scrying has shown us that the area about Mithril Hall is overrun, demon hordes and drow.
Is not Luskan also overrun?
Catti Bree reminded her. The fleet.
The Host Tower is distinct and very receptive to magical messages, Penelope replied. The dwarves are deep in their hole and likely engaged in fierce battle.
We need to open the gateways, Catti Bree said determinedly. And we need, most of all, to learn if their collapse portends something more dire. And we must be fast in our research, for if the Host Tower has weakened its magical energy to Gontalgrim, the Primordial might shake itself free once more. The last time that happened, Neverwinter City was obliterated.
I will go to Gronf, Penelope announced.
You don't even know if the Host Tower remains intact or under his control.
Someone has to find out.
Catti Bree took Penelope by the arm.
I cannot lose you, she quietly said.
I know not what I've already lost.
Old Kipper will take me there, and we'll both have spells ready to remove ourselves quickly if necessary, I promise.
Catti Bree nodded and let go of Penelope's arm, and Penelope swung about to wrap the very pregnant woman in a tight hug.
I'll find Drizzt, she whispered in Catti Bree's ear. I promise.
Catti Bree flashed her a smile when she pulled back and turned for the door, but it was a strained one, to be sure. She was here, preparing to give birth, and it seemed as if all the world about her had gone crazy. She had never felt so helpless in her life, not even when she had been a prisoner of Artemis and Treri those many years before, being dragged across Faerun in pursuit of Regis. She held that memory close now, a vivid reminder that she and her friends, the companions of the Hall, had been battling long odds and winning for a very, very long time.
By the gods, Regis muttered,
lying atop an embankment along with his four companions. Below them, a formation of huge driders, perhaps 100 strong, crossed a wide field. The friends had been traveling for nearly a 10-day, a difficult journey both emotionally and, especially for Artemis and Treri, physically. Ivanel had done much to aid in their progress, with not just spells of healing and spells to provide nourishment, but also spells to repel them on their way. Though not with teleportation or anything of that sort, she wanted them all to digest the new reality fully,
and she also wanted to get a good understanding of the disposition of the lands between Thornhold and Gauntlegrim.
"Lots of demons," said Athrogate.
"Those aren't demons," Evenel corrected. "The demons, I suspect, are inside Gauntlegrim. This is the vanguard of the Drow force."
"I thought Dryders were rare," said Dahlia.
"So did I," Evenel replied.
"I have no answers for this."
"How about the big answer to the big question?" asked Athrogate. "Like, how are we meaning to get to them doors?"
He nodded out across the field, but none had to follow that movement to know what he meant. Beyond the field lay some trees, and beyond that wood the ruined and now clearly occupied halfling village of Bleeding Vines. To the right, south of the village, stood the empty tram station, the exit and entrance tunnels to Gauntlegrim evident along the side of the rising mountain.
"Getting to them won't do us any good if we're marching down into a horde of demons," Regis remarked.
"Not seeing a better way," said the dwarf.
"You have nothing, lady?"
the halfling asked Evenel.
"I have something," she replied, "but I had hoped to gather more information before using it."
She rolled onto her back then and began whispering, too low for any of the others to make out the words. They started to understand when her magical scouts, crystal-like birds, began to fly in, perching on her chest and whispering into her ears, one by one. It went on for a long while, when finally an exasperated Evenel sat up.
"The land about us is all lost," she announced.
"Yeah, we seen that," said Athrogate. "Don't take a bird to know."
"All about us," the drow woman clarified.
"Here to Luskin, all of the coast, all of the crags. Port Last labors under the crack of Gnoll whips."
"Gnolls?" Athrogate snorted. "We should go kill them all to death just because they're gnolls."
"Demons are about the village before us, but mostly the major fiends," Evenel went on. "I expect that the lesser monsters are below, likely among the higher levels of Gauntlegrim. King Brunner is sorely pressed, if not already conquered."
"So what do we do?"
Regis asked. Evenel shook her head, mulling it over.
"We go in," said Athrogate.
"And if there is no refuge within?" Dahlia asked. "If it is all demons and drow?"
"Then we go right through and out the other side," Evenel announced. "Come now, down the hill." She stood up and paced down the embankment, the others following. Athrogate bolstering and Trary, who was still a bit unsteady on his swollen legs.
"Join hands," Evenel instructed them. "Artemis and Trary to me."
"We going to run again?"
Athrogate asked. For the few times they had done this in the last days, Evenel had cast a Dwi armor to speed them on their way. Artemis and Trary groaned. These speeding travels were draining his limited strength.
"This is different," Evenel promised, mostly to the battered man. She took up his hand. "Athrogate, take his other hand. Then you, Regis, then Dahlia. No matter what happens, do not let go, any of you."
"Are we trip and fall?" asked the dwarf, who errantly believed he had heard this speech before.
"Or you will become substantial in the midst of 1,000 fiends, and not I, nor even your god could save you," said Evenel. And as soon as the living chain was formed, she began spellcasting.
"What are—"
Athrogate started.
"Just shut up and hold on," Dahlia told him. "For our sake and your own, hold on."
Dahlia's voice thinned as she spoke, became insubstantial, became as the wind in the ears of her companions. For soon they were the wind and little more, a cloud of swirling vapors. Curiously, Regis still felt the grip of Dahlia and of Athrogate, though he had no hand that he could determine. But they were joined, locked, and he was glad of it as the cloud began to drift, then move with purpose to Evenel's tug, a pull both physical, somehow, and telepathic. All as one, they swept up over the embankment and down to the field. Regis had to strain to hold focus when Evenel took them right across the formation of Dryders, weaving through the abominations as if they were no more than a cloud, and indeed, they weren't. Still, more than one Drider took note of their passing, though none showed any understanding of what this strange fog might be.
This is what it's like when a ghost passes by, the halfling thought. A chill breeze.
Into bleeding vines, they passed among drow, and these enemies seemed more aware than the Driders had been. Several hopping and turning, calling out to priestesses, and Regis saw one, then another, began casting some spell. Evenel moved them more swiftly then, because she was afraid, Regis knew. Could these priestesses pull them out of her windwalk? Oh, the horror to be dropped into the middle of this ferocious army. The halfling relaxed only a bit when they soared into the tunnel, speeding down into the darkness, then, soon after, into the grand entry cavern, the place thick with demons and driders. Regis's heart sank when they crossed to the small pond, then drifted over the pond and into the complex proper, to find the place also teeming with monstrous denizens of the lower plains. Through the rooms, down the stairs, to the great chamber separating the top levels from the main complex, and down there, too, demons roamed. The sound of fighting made the halfling's spirits leap as they passed from that huge chamber into the tighter ways leading to the great forge. Soon they crossed the battleground, dwarven side-slinger catapults blasting minor demons to pieces, dwarven soldiers holding their ground, beating back the press of the horde. Then it was all dwarves again, clerics tending to the wounded, reinforcements ready for their turn at the front lines. Beyond that, though, Gauntlegrim, King Brunner's Gauntlegrim, remained. They came to a stop in a tunnel with a pair of dwarven sentries, near to the main chambers of the Gauntlegrim leaders, and there, some distance from the two who guarded an ornate door that Regis knew well, Evenel released her spell. The five companions became corporeal in a flash, all but Evenel stumbling a bit from the stark transition. "What ho!" the dwarves yelled, lowering their pikes and readying a charge.
"Be easy, my friends," said Evenel. "You know me, a friend of Drizzt and of Jarlaxle." "And me," Regis announced, rushing around to put himself between the dwarves and his companions.
"Rumblebelly!" the two dwarves cried in unison.
"Aye," Regis replied. "You must take us to King Brunner at once, and to Lady Dodala Topolino. Please tell me that my wife is safe."
"Aye, Rumblebelly," one of the dwarves replied. "She's as well as any of us, which ain't so well, ye might be guessing."
Regis, of course, understood that to be true enough, but his relief was profound. He had just lost Drizzt. He couldn't bear to lose his beloved Dodala, too. A knock had Catti Bree leaping up, or rather, rolling carefully from her couch and moving as fast as she could manage for her door. She pulled it open, expecting Penelope with news from Luskin, but found instead a tall, thin man dressed in simple light brown robes.
"Brother Afafrenfir?" she asked, surprised.
"I am formally named as a master now, but yes, good lady." He looked at her very swollen abdomen.
"I trust that you are well?"
"I am."
He nodded and smiled warmly, his gaze locked on her belly.
"Can I help you?" she asked, feeling a bit unnerved. "I mean, please, do come in."
"Thank you, lady. I am looking for Drizzt, and I beg of you, pardon my surprise and intrigue here. I did not mean—"
"Yes, brother, the child is Drizzt."
Afafrenfir locked eyes with Catti Bree, his jaw hanging open.
He only mentioned that he could not immediately return with me to the Monastery of the Yellow Rose when I last spoke with him to extend Grandmaster Kane's invitation. I had thought something amiss."
"Well, so it is."
"Hardly amiss," the monk replied, his arms coming forward as if he wanted to hug Catti Bree, but couldn't quite figure out if he should.
She stepped forward and initiated a full hug.
"Oh, but a child of two such heroes will be the grandest," Afafrenfir stuttered, his voice breaking just a bit.
"A human and a drow?"
"Half-elves are not so uncommon," Catti Bree reminded him. "But half-drow? I have never heard," Afafrenfir said.
He shook his head suddenly and quite emphatically, waving his hands as if trying to take back the words.
and Catti Bree knew that he had recognized the growing scowl on her face.
"I can only imagine the beauty of this child," Afrafrenfir cried, and he surely seemed sincere.
"Fear not, brother. I understand your surprise and your hesitance," she said generously.
"No, lady. If you think it hesitance, then I have misrepresented that which is in my heart," the monk replied. "This is glorious news, and the child will be wonderful and beautiful."
"And shunned?" The monk's eyes widened.
"Never."
Catti Bree smiled to relieve the tension, and in truth, she was just teasing the exuberant Afrafrenfir. She knew, certainly so, the trials her half-human, half-drow child would face, and knew, too, that no child born to any Waterdavian lady or Damaran queen would come into the world with a larger and more wonderful group of supporters to chase away any who could not see past the unusual combination of its heritage.
"May your claim prove true," she said.
"Oh, it shall." "So, if you come to entice Driz to your monastery, know that I'll not hear of it. And I fear he could not anyway, for a darkness has come again. Or perhaps it is the same darkness, over and over, relentless and destructive. No, of course he could not, and word of the growing turmoil in the region has reached us in Damara. But that is not why I've journeyed this far west. I must speak with Drizzt at once."
"He isn't here," Catti Bree admitted.
"He is in Gontalgrim, fighting beside King Brunner." She noted the blood draining from Afrafrenfir's face.
"What do you know, brother?"
"Perhaps nothing.
Tell me, has Gontalgrim fallen?"
"I have no knowledge of Gontalgrim, lady, on my word."
"Then what? Why have you come?"
Afrafrenfir swallowed hard.
"Grandmaster Cain,"
he paused and seemed to be searching for the proper words.
"Grandmaster Cain sensed something. I know not how to describe it. A transcendence of the mortal body, like death, but not so."
Catti Bree's face screwed up in obvious confusion. As a powerful priestess, she knew of things like plane walking and astral projection, where a powerful spellcaster could transfer herself to another plane of existence. But she was fairly certain that Afrafrenfir was speaking of something else.
"It is almost certainly nothing of concern," the monk said. "I only mention it because it is something that would likely interest Drizzt after his long hours of training with the Grand Master of Flowers. Perhaps Grand Master Cain thought that the discovery of this sensation of his would tempt Drizzt back to the monastery," Catti Bree offered.
"I am sure that's it," said Afrafrenfir. Catti Bree started to press for more of an explanation, but Penelope Harpal appeared at the open door, hustling inside. She glanced at Afrafrenfir only briefly, with just a slight nod to acknowledge his presence.
"I would speak with you alone," she told Catti Bree.
"Master Afrafrenfir has come here in search of Drizzt," Catti Bree replied. "I suspect his road beside us has only now just begun." Penelope looked at him and offered another nod, then said, her expression grim,
"Gromph would not permit me entrance."
"The host tower of the Arcane?" Afrafrenfir asked.
"His extravagant quarters," she clarified. "His door was closed to me." She turned to Catti Bree.
"Your old acquaintances, Lady Avalir and Lord Paris Ulfbinder, answered my call and took me into Avalir's chambers to parley. We spoke only briefly because Archmage Gromph was not pleased that I had even been allowed into the host tower. Not at all. The host tower is neutral in this war by his command."
"Neutral?"
"Yes. It was Gromph who crippled the magical flow of energy and thus shut down the magical portals."
"Then he sides with the invaders," Catti Bree said.
"According to Lord Paris, he claims not to. But the drow who have come to the lands and taken the demon army, and also the fleet that Lord Brevenden Margaster of Waterdeep sailed to Luskan, are very powerful. Gromph made it clear to all the mages within the host tower that he, and they, if they wanted to remain alive and in their new home, would not go against the invaders. Nor would he allow me to stay, since my presence alone could forfeit his neutral status."
"They court disaster," Catti Bree said.
Woe to them all. The invaders are keeping far from the tower. They will not challenge the powers assembled there. They tried only once, and the evidence of the slaughter was thick about the fields surrounding the tower. If the Drow win across the north, it will only be a matter of time before they fully claim the host tower. Penelope nodded. Where is Luskin now, then? Afrafrenfir asked. Luskin is under the command of High Captain Revendon Margaster, it would seem. Fully so, with only the host tower allowed some autonomy. He took the city that quickly? Luskin's hodgepodge fleet and almost all of her captains are pirates, Penelope explained. There was fighting for only a bloody night and a day following, but the loyalties of such self-interested people as those in power in Luskin are as changeable as the wind. It would seem that they decided it was better to join with the invaders than to fight them. So they simply bent their knees to a new invader? The monk asked. I'd hardly say they bent the knee, but one lord or another, Penelope replied. This lord is backed by Drow, so it seems, and with demons. N knows, Penelope agreed. The fleet was thick with the wild beasts, and now so are the streets of Luskin. But recognize, too, that the power of Luskin before the attack was also held by Drow. Jarlaxle and Bregan D'Earth, Catti Bree explained to the monk. Thus, they traded one high captain for another, Penelope said, and one more wretched, it seems, and so, one who will allow them their piracy and murderous ways with even less restraint. Make no mistake, the largest complaint Paris and Avalir had heard of Jarlaxle's agent, High Captain Beniago Kurth, was that he was bringing a measure of civility and community to the City of Sails. Catti Bree nodded and chuckled helplessly, and Afrafrenfir looked at her curiously. Jarlaxle is no evil person, she explained. Even King Brunner approved of Bregan D'Earth's secret power behind the dark veil of Luskin. Jarlaxle is fierce, but only when he needs to be, and only against those who deserve it. His goal was to use the best interests of the people of Luskin against their traditional behavior. To show them a better way, the monk said. Catti Bree nodded. Slowly, and with their consent, as they found the ways of trade more lucrative and less mortal than their piracy. They think they traded the Drow for a Waterdavian lord, and one wretched enough to accept their lifestyles, said Penelope. Gromf knows the truth, though. The city will be enslaved soon enough, serving merciless masters, or should I say, matrons? Damn him, Catti Bree muttered, treacherous fool. More fearful than malignant, I believe, Penelope said. From all I could garner from Avalir and Paris, Gromf is truly afraid of the storm that has come to his front door. Remember, he was once Archmage of Menzo Berenzon. He understands the power Menzo Berenzon has brought to bear, and he feels it most keenly, because he was finding a life he had never been brave enough to even imagine in the grand multidimensional corridors and mansions of the host tower of the Arcane. Catti Bree sighed and waddled wearily to take a seat in a soft chair. Whatever his reasons, whatever his feelings, we must open those gates, she said. We cannot. Not from here, perhaps. Not from the host tower, either. You are in no position to challenge the likes of Gromf Beenri, and we could not begin to bring enough power to bear to convince any within to go against him. From Gontalgrim, Catti Bree explained. There may be a way to open the portals, whether the host tower is involved or not. You must get me to Gontalgrim post-haste. Penelope wore a doubtful expression. You just teleported to Luskin and back with ease, Catti Bree argued. The host tower is a prepared destination for such spells, Penelope said. Both Kipper and I are attuned to the room created for this exact purpose. Neither of us have any real knowledge of Gontalgrim. You have been there? Only once and only briefly, simply to try the portal when it first became active. So yes, I know the portal room. Enough to teleport there. Penelope paused and offered no agreement. I saw it only briefly, and saw keenly its low ceiling and cramped walls. Certainly it is not a place favorable for such an attempt. The gates are similar to a permanent circle, are they not? Are they?
Caddybree wanted to answer in the affirmative, but she could not, because she did not know.
"Please, we have to try," Caddybree pleaded. "If I get to Gauntlegrim, there is much I might be able to do."
"How? The host tower controls. The primordial is the power," Caddybree reminded her.
"The host tower merely harnesses the being. I can speak with it."
"To what end?"
"A primordial is a being that is far beyond our comprehension. Its desires are not ours, and so far removed from ours that you cannot even relate to them."
"We have to try," Caddybree said again.
"You would risk your child?"
The question rocked Caddybree.
"Send me," said Afrafrenfear.
"I cannot send anyone," said Penelope. "The mage must accompany."
"Then go with me," Afrafrenfear said. "If familiarity with the targeted area of your spell is the key for success, then go and familiarize yourself."
"There remains that first journey," Caddybree reminded the agitated monk.
"Courage is needed," he returned.
"No, he is right," Penelope agreed. "We cannot shy from pursuing any hope, however slight, in desperate times. I will find Kipper. He is much stronger in this magic. We will go to Gauntlegrim together and prepare a circle, then return quickly."
She paused, another cloud drifting across her expression.
"If we are able, I mean. If the portal room remains free of the demon attackers. We know not if any or if all of Gauntlegrim has fallen."
"Take me as well," said Afrafrenfear. "If we appear in a place of danger, I will protect you while you get us out of there."
"I cannot ask," Caddybree started to argue, but the monk was hearing none of it.
"You cannot," he said, "because there is nothing to ask of me. This is my choice."
"Come," he told Penelope, "let us be quick. The crumbling world will not wait for heroes who pause."